stories carry with them great power.
They can transport us into the light and into the dark.
And into a place in between, a land of shadows.
It is in this land where the macabre and the strange reign.
With tales of terror,
tales of hope,
tales of the whimsical,
and the weird.
These are stories told in the shadows.
And we are the shadow storytellers.
Nothing highlights a sudden change in a family like that first holiday season. Adjusting old traditions to a new status quo is always challenging, but it's most painful when those sudden changes involve losing a loved one. Today, a monster will make things even more difficult for a grieving family, putting them in particular need of some Christmas magic in a story we call My New Favorite Decoration.
I was the only one who saw the footprints in the snow. But I wasn't in any position mentally or emotionally to do anything about it. They came out of the woods, purposefully aimed directly at my grandparents' cabin, with no accompanying footprints leading out of the cabin to indicate someone had come and gone. I knew they were wrong at first sight, and a voice in the back of my mind told me to be on alert, but since I was in the middle of a panic attack at the time, that voice wasn't terribly loud. I'd fallen to my hands and knees in the snow, coughing and crying and spitting up strands of mucus I seemed to produce in infinite quantity. I wanted to cry and scream and tear the world apart so everyone could feel what I was feeling. But if I did, then people would come out of the cabin and ask me what was wrong, and that was the last thing I wanted. I needed quiet. I needed solitude. This was the only way I might return to something resembling normal, and I needed to be normal. It was Christmas, after all. It wasn't just Christmas, though. No, it was the first Christmas since Dad died. He'd passed unexpectedly only 7 months before. An aneurysm, the autopsy confirmed. One moment, he was at the neighborhood Kinko's getting some pictures printed up, and the next, he cried out in pain and fell to the floor, dead instantly. I wasn't there. But my 8-year-old sister Kate was, and even 7 months on, she still wasn't quite right. None of us were, really. Mom was a mess. My big sister, Helena, still cried almost every time his name was mentioned. I took it on myself to be the strong one, even though I didn't really have to. After all, I was the 13-year-old middle child who'd already been going through a half-assed goth phase at the time. The one everyone ignored in hopes that one day I'd snap out of it and be normal again. Only Dad ever had my side, and now that he was gone, I felt like I had to carry on his legacy and keep everyone afloat. So, I was the strong one. I was the one reminding everyone to keep on going, that Dad would want us to keep living our lives, laughing when we could and having as much fun as we would have had while he was alive. Even though I was screaming inside much of the time, I kept that strong facade and that steely resolve, and everything seemed like it might actually be okay. Then, of course, the holidays had to roll around. It was bad enough that Christmas was one of Dad's favorite times of year, but that my grandparents, his parents, had to invite us up to their cabin near the mountains made his absence particularly distinct. We'd gone up to visit them there for the holidays a few times before, and since white Christmases were few and far between in our Southern California home, it was always a magical experience. I knew that, without Dad, it would no doubt be a less magical experience than it had been in the past, but I was hoping it would still have some of that holiday cheer, and that everyone wouldn't be crying too much. We got up there okay, singing songs and fighting over what snacks to order during our rest stops. We even did well when Grandma and Grandpa greeted us at the front door. I held it together pretty well, and thought that I might have been able to see the rest of the holiday through without anything going awry. And then I had to see it. The decoration. Dad's decoration. Sitting on the mantel above the roaring fire and all of our stockings, minus one this year, was that silly decoration Dad insisted on bringing up here 5 years ago. It was a cheesy thing he'd picked up at a tourist trap general store on our way up here, a a colorful hunk of plastic about 12 inches tall, of Santa Claus in a Hawaiian shirt and rollerblades, looking like he was having the time of his life. He was listening to a Walkman, no doubt playing slightly cooler than usual covers of Christmas classics, his lips curled in a round and hearty ho-ho-ho. Since Dad frequently wore Hawaiian shirts and was looking more like Santa with every year given his expanding belly and whitening beard, he fell in love and insisted that my grandparents put it up, no matter how much Grandma and all of her traditional Christmas Martha Stewart worshipping glory hated it. Every time she looked at it, I knew she was finding some excuse to throw it away, or perhaps accidentally drop it in the fire. Now it held place of pride on the mantle. Seeing that cheesy decoration lovingly encircled with fresh-cut pine boughs and lights, it all hit me. This would be my first Christmas without Dad, and the holiday season wouldn't be nearly so bright for his absence. So I ran outside, and I saw the footprints without really seeing them, and there I was when Helena finally came outside and patted me on the back. "Jessica, are you—" "No, that's a silly question," she said, trailing off but still rubbing my back. "He's gone," I sobbed. "I know, I miss him too. We all do," Helena said. "Not like I do," I yelled at her. "Dad was the only one around here who liked me. He was the only one who tried to understand me. Not like you, not like Kate, not Mom or Grandma or Grandpa and everyone else who hates me but doesn't have the balls to say it. Everyone was always worried about all of you because you let it show, and I had to stay strong and fucking brave because if I didn't prop all of you up, then nobody else would have, and I didn't get to finish whatever stupid, hateful thing I wanted to throw at Helena. Perfect Helena with her beautiful blonde hair and homecoming queen sash and her 4.0 GPA and her quarterback boyfriend and her everything. I didn't get to throw years of jealousy and anger at her like I wanted to, because she pulled me into a powerful hug, so strong and warm that I was certain she'd never let me go. "Jess, none of us hate you. We may not always understand you, but we all love you. The way you've been for us lately, it can't have been easy. I know it. Mom knows it. I think even Kate understands it. I'm the oldest. I should have been the strong one. This shouldn't have been on you. But you stepped up and saved us when we needed saving, and if none of us have been showing enough appreciation for that, then I'm sorry. I'm so, so fucking sorry," Helena said, her tears falling on my cheek. "Really?" I asked. "Really," she replied. "We wouldn't be what we are now without you." I honestly never expected to hear that. I may have always hoped and dreamed, but never had any true expectation that one of them would have said something. "And you..." God, this part was crazy hard to ask. "You guys really love me?" "Of course we do, dummy," Helena replied. "Even when I'm being a bitch?" I asked. Helena laughed. "Even then, no matter how hard you make it to like you sometimes, we will always love you." I sniffled, wiping snot on the back of my sleeve. I looked down at the snow, again seeing the footprints, again thinking that something about them felt wrong and that I should have told someone. But Helena helped me to my feet and sent all those thoughts away. "Come on, it's cold out here, and it's not inside. Grandma made hot cocoa. Doesn't that sound good?" I smiled, remembering something Dad would tell us if we were ever in a bad mood during the cold months. "Hot cocoa fixes everything." "Darn tootin'," Helena replied, using another of Dad's favorite sayings. We looked at each other for a moment, each of us shedding a few more tears as we remembered Dad and acutely felt his absence, before we quickly shared another strong, sisterly hug. I knew then that something had changed between us, that there might have been a new understanding, a layer of ice between us thawed. Maybe she wasn't as bad as I'd made her out to be, but we still had a ways to go before we'd be able to fix everything. Sniffling, we helped each other become as presentable as possible before heading back inside the cabin. Helena was right. It was much warmer inside. There were pleasant sounds of life all around us that reminded me of family and Christmas cheer. Footsteps on the floor above us, Kate playing with toys down the hall. Music and voices coming from the living room. Helena and I walked toward these comforting sounds, picking up the tail end of a conversation Mom was having with my grandparents. "Seven people?" Mom asked. "Seven people," Grandpa confirmed. "He's dressed in a Santa suit?" Mom asked. "Last time the cops saw him," Grandpa replied. "A man that dangerous, dressed like that, he could perform a lot of wickedness before they take him back to that state hospital," Grandma scoffed. "Or they shoot him," Grandpa replied. "Well, I..." Mom began, looking up at us and throwing on a smile. "Hey, girls, everything all right?" Grandma and Grandpa had thrown on a couple warm smiles as well, and Helena and I did the same. It wasn't a matter of being strong anymore, but a matter of wanting to share in the good cheer with everyone else. I forced myself to look up at the mantle, to see Dad's silly decoration and look at it in a different way. If it took all the willpower I had, I wasn't going to see it as a reminder that Dad was gone. No, I was going to look at it as him watching over us. Dad was going to be with us for Christmas after all, and always would be if I had anything to say about it. "Yeah, just had to get something out, but we got it out," Helena said, comfortingly squeezing my shoulder. Since Mom probably couldn't remember the last time she saw us this chummy, she just smiled broadly and said, "Excellent, because we're going to decorate the tree soon and wanted to wait up for you." Grandpa laughed, his cheeks flushing red. "Your old grandma would have probably started without you if you'd taken any longer, though. Gotta have all this looking just so, right, honey?" Grandma rolled her eyes at him, but pointed us to a bowl of immaculate white popcorn and some string. The tree, one so tall that even Grandpa would need a ladder to reach the top, already had lights and a star at the peak. But with boxes of ornaments, tinsel, and popcorn garlands that still needed to be placed, we had work ahead of us. I smiled, a little of that take-charge attitude I'd built up these past few months coming through, but for the first time without a feeling of obligation. Now it came unbidden, completely welcome and feeling wonderful. "Well, tell us where we need to be, and we're there. Let's decorate this tree," I exclaimed. The rest of the day passed by in a way that was, for all intents and purposes, uneventful, but felt anything but. Although there was definitely a feeling of emptiness as we decorated the tree without Dad, between the six of us, we were all able to contribute enough extra to almost fill the void he left. And yet, as much as I tried to dismiss it, I had a strange feeling that Dad was with us, but not in a good way. As we decorated the tree, sung songs, and shared in hot cocoa, I couldn't help but feel that we were being watched. Whenever I looked back at Dad's decoration on the mantle, it seemed that I just caught it looking and snapping back into place. It didn't look any different than it had earlier, I know this, but I couldn't shake that feeling no matter how hard I tried. That feeling wasn't helped when it started to fall over. We'd just hung the first of the popcorn garlands when we heard it clatter to the floor in front of the fireplace. Even though it unnerved me every bit as much as it comforted me, I felt obliged to put it back into place, since I was the closest one to it. I looked at its feet, and since the fake rollerblades were narrow and uneven, I figured that it just became unbalanced and tipped over the edge. I put it back on the mantelpiece, leaning its back against the brick of the chimney and pushing some of the pine boughs underneath its feet. I tested it, rocking it back and forth, and save for adding glue to its feet, I thought I got it about as stable as was possible. So you can understand my fright when, not 10 minutes later, we heard it clatter to the floor again. I looked at it, still feeling this strange sense of something not being right. I'd convinced myself that my grief and emotional outpouring with Helena had put me in a state where my animal instincts were in overdrive, but there was something more to it. It felt like, whenever I looked at the figure, it was issuing an unpleasant warning. Don't ask me how, but I knew. I just knew that it wanted me away from here. Though if anyone else was getting that feeling, they weren't showing it. Grandpa went to the kitchen junk drawer and pulled out an adhesive hook, attached it to the bricks of the chimney, and, once it felt secure enough, wrapped a length of string around that and the rollerblading Santa's waist to hold it in place. If it was going to leave the mantle now, it was going to have to be torn off. I hoped that this would be enough to clear my mind, but no matter where I was or what I did in that cabin, that feeling of being watched remained. There were eyes on me, footsteps following me no matter where I went. I did everything I could to distract myself. I talked with Grandma and Grandpa about how school had been going for me, dodging Grandma's questions about my style choices and Grandpa's questions about my lack of dating life quite well, if I must say so myself. I helped Mom and Helena in the kitchen as they threw together some last-minute Christmas cookies. Neither of them had much in the way of decorative skills, but the messy cookies would still taste good when we were done with them. I even, God help me, made some time to play with Kate. Now, before Dad had died, she was definitely the daddy's girl of the three of us, a spoiled snot who talked a mile a minute and could get away with anything if she smiled cutely enough. After she watched Dad die on the floor of that Kinko's, she was quiet and withdrawn. Neither Kate was exactly fun to be around, and even when I was being strong for the family, I did what I could to keep her at arm's length. Now, well, I made the effort. Drawing her back out of her shell was a challenge beyond my capabilities that day, but I did my damnedest. Between the games we'd brought and the ancient toys that Grandma and Grandpa had stashed up at their cabin, we played under the light of the Christmas tree and the watchful eyes of the rollerblading Santa. I wanted to play anywhere other than there, but since Kate seemed to get the greatest comfort sitting right here, I sucked it up and played with her. It took a while, but it seemed to be helping. She was a lot quieter and more subdued than her former bratty self, but as we started making the rounds in Monopoly, her recently quieted, greedy side came out, and she became animated with play. Even though I wasn't sure I wanted to see a return of this side of her, it was better than the alternative, and almost made up for playing in this creepy room. It was around this time that I began to hear the muttering. It was close by and far off all at once, an intertwining of voices whose words could not be made out but whose intents were clear. The first was definitively Dad's, a quiet, calming sound that, even though it upset me, still offered a faint sense of comfort. That warning was still there, louder and more insistent than ever, but it didn't frighten me. No, that was what the other voice was for. This was a darker voice, raspy and wet, a hungry and monstrous man's voice. It was the opposite of Dad's, yet I could hear it all too clearly when I looked upon the skating Santa decoration. If Kate heard it, she didn't let on, and if I was the only one hearing it, I knew all too well that it meant it was likely only in my head. If it was in my head, it was my problem, and not one I wanted to put on anyone else when things were going so well. After all, it was Christmas Eve, and everyone was happy. Actually happy for the first time in about as long as I could remember. I wasn't going to mess that up, so I didn't say anything. In retrospect, I probably should have. Dinner was warm and large enough that I was almost capable of forgetting what I'd heard in the living room, and with everyone stuffed and tired after a long while sitting by the fire and snacking on cookies, it was about time to turn in for the night so we'd be ready for a bright and happy, or at least as happy as we could manage, Christmas morning. There was still enough unsettling me that I didn't fall asleep easily. Sleeping in the bed opposite me, Kate didn't have that problem, passing out and snoring in a matter of minutes. I tried to sort out what I could about what was happening, what I was seeing and hearing, and whether it meant I was losing my mind, or if this was simply a part of the grieving process that everyone went through. It was with these thoughts that exhaustion finally took me into a fitful sleep. My dreams were shaky but intense, images of Christmas and blood, of Dad shaking and falling on the floor of that Kinko's while Kate screamed for help that would come but wouldn't do any good, of that damn skating Santa decoration standing over my bed larger than life and watching me hungrily. Far away, I heard the sounds of glass breaking, of screams and yells of anger, struggle and fear. I took this as part of my dream until the screams closed in. Jessica! Jessica! Those screams were in this room. Those screams were real. Those screams were Kate. Blearily, I opened my eyes, and for a second I could have sworn I actually had lost my mind, or perhaps was still dreaming. After all, Santa Claus himself was standing in our room over Kate's bed. Only, it wasn't actually Santa Claus. This wasn't a portly, friendly man with a red nose and a big white beard. Oh, sure, he had the red costume of Santa Claus, but it was torn and soiled from a lot of miles of bad road. He was a giant, nearly 7 feet tall, of abject horror and bulging muscle. Greasy black hair hung out from under the Santa hat, almost as dark as the man's eyes and grimy teeth. I couldn't smell him from where I was, but I knew on sight that he stank horribly, and that if I allowed him near me, he'd kill me. Kate was on her bed, hands and feet bound behind her in duct tape, which the man had also just finished placing over her mouth. Too afraid to do anything, I saw her drop into that far-off, quiet place, tears brimming from her eyes, but not even an effort to scream escaping her taped-over lips. I wasn't nearly so quiet. I screamed like a banshee, trying to summon Mom, Grandma, or even Grandpa. Grandpa usually had a gun or two, no matter where he went, and I was naive enough to believe that this might actually make a difference. When nobody came to my screams, I threw everything I had within arm's reach at this giant, trying to scare him off, hurt him. I didn't know, but I was acting on pure instinct. Of course, throwing balled-up socks and a travel alarm clock that couldn't have weighed more than a few ounces had about as much chance of scaring off this monster in our bedroom as an ant had of stopping the sun from rising by asking it politely. But it was all I could think of doing in my hazy, half-asleep state. The beast in the Santa suit simply looked down at the objects I'd pitifully thrown at him, then at me, smiling so widely that he might have been mistaken for the Grinch if he weren't so completely and utterly terrifying. Then he moved. For a man of his size, he was fast and quiet. He turned me over in bed so effortlessly that I might as well have weighed nothing next to him. His strong hands, why did he have only 4 fingers on each hand? Easily taped up my hands and feet and mouth, no matter how much I thrashed and screamed and called for help. Suddenly so helpless, so powerless. I was a little girl again, crying and silently pleading that this man was not the thing of nightmares everyone had warned me about ever since before I hit puberty. Even though I knew it was impossible for him to hear me, I called out to Dad most strongly of all. It was a stupid, childish impulse, but it was the only thing that felt right. It didn't matter to this monster. As if we weighed nothing, he picked up Kate and me, slinging each of us over one shoulder, and carried us out into the hall. He dropped us on the floor, hard. We weren't alone. Mom, Helena, Grandma, and Grandpa were all bound and gagged on the floor of the hall. Grandpa's face was bleeding, probably from trying to fight the beast. Given his pained groans and fluttery eyes, I doubted it went very well. The monster paced the hallway between the 6 of us lined up, picking up a large, double-bladed woodsman's axe he'd propped up against the wall. Now that there was silence in the hall, save for our gagged whimpers, I could actually hear this monster for the first time. In addition to his raspy, wet breath, I could hear that low, frantic muttering that I'd heard earlier in the living room. This wasn't Dad's voice, but a voice that filled me with a dread greater than any I'd ever known. And that was when that terrible image of the footprints in the snow actually fell into place for me. This wasn't just some random home intruder who'd broken in the middle of the night. This monster had been here all day, watching, learning, waiting. God, he was likely here before we got here, maybe even before Grandma and Grandpa got here. He could have hurt us at any time, but he wanted to wait for the most dramatic moment possible to ensure the greatest fear in us. And that muttering, that cruel voice, none of it ever stopped. This voice would be the last thing I'd ever hear. I was certain of it. This cruel mockery of Santa stood between us, walking up and down the hall and looking down at each of us with his axe up on his shoulder. That damned muttering never stopped, but I could just tell that he was surveying us, waiting to pick out which one he wanted to do whatever he wanted to do with us first. He stopped by Mom, swinging the axe over her head. It carved a swath through the wall, raining down splinters and chunks of drywall around her. All of us screamed behind the duct tape, in fear, in anger, whatever we thought might save Mom. But we were all helpless before him. he chuckled. The beast actually chuckled. He was truly enjoying our suffering. This was already the worst Christmas our family would have to endure, and he had the gall to break in and torment us instead of granting us the mercy of a quick end. This terrible indignity is what angered me the most, and that's why I contorted my body so I could awkwardly kick my bound feet at him. It was a stupid, futile gesture, my feet hitting his shin that might as well have been made of concrete for how much it hurt me, but it was the closest to feeling good that I could have found in that moment. That stopped him, if just momentarily. He looked down at me, pointing the axe at my face, then smiled his horrible, rotten Grinch smile. He reached down for me, tossing me back up onto his shoulder. I heard my family screaming behind their gags and did everything I could to focus on that, to remember them not as they were now, but all the good times we had had together. Maybe if I focused on the good, this creature couldn't hurt me. And if he couldn't hurt me... That was foolish. Even the manic, hopeful part of my mind knew it. This next part was going to hurt because he was going to take his time. The monster carried me down the hall, down the stairs and into the living room. He dropped me hard in front of the fireplace, underneath the ever-watchful eyes of Dad's skating Santa decoration, now tied to the chimney. Blindly, I called out to it. My words were muffled by the tape, and there was no way Dad was going to come for me. I knew this, but I hoped. God, how I hoped. I'd been the strong one for so long now because Dad wasn't around to be the strong one for us. Now that I couldn't be strong, he was the only one I could think of. The monster kicked me in the side, pain flaring through the right half of my body as I was rolled up against the couch, sitting up and facing the fireplace. Roughly, he reached down and removed the tape covering my mouth. His face, with his rotten mouth and his terrible dark eyes, was only inches away from mine. His breath was an open grave, smelling of centuries of death and decay, a swampy abyss that would envelop me and take me away from the warm family confines of this cozy cabin and drag me straight into one of those horrible biblical interpretations of hell. His mouth worked in that constant low muttering, filling my lungs with his stink. Then he spoke.
"Sing for me," he croaked. "Sing for me something of Christmas."
"What?" I asked.
"You heard me,"
he hissed, pressing his face next to mine as he took a good whiff of my hair.
"Sing for me something of Christmas, or I'll bring one of them down here and I'll hurt them. I'll hurt them badly. I'll make you watch. I'll make you help. So sing for me."
The grotesque, horrible images this created in my mind were enough to almost make me scream out in fear. I stopped myself, only because I knew it wouldn't do any good. We were so isolated that no one would hear us even if there wasn't a snowstorm outside. "You'll do it anyway," I coughed, the side of my body he'd kicked aching terribly. I didn't know if he'd broken anything, but it sure felt like he did.
"Maybe I will, maybe I won't," the monster continued, bringing his face back to mine.
He leaned his forehead against mine, pressing the tip of his nose against the tip of mine and practically speaking directly into my mouth.
"Do you want to find out, or do you want to sing me something of Christmas?"
I didn't want to find out. I didn't want to sing, but I didn't want to find out more. I looked out of the corner of my eye, getting a good look at the decoration on the mantle. I looked at it and pulled what power I could from it, hoping that wherever he was, Dad might hear my call and give me whatever help he could. If he could just give me a little bit of his strength. Painfully clearing my throat, I croaked out,
"Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way."
At first, the beast kept his face pressed up against mine, lowly muttering to himself as his lips curled up into that too wide smile. But the more I got into the singing, the more he began to move. He stood up and backed away from me without ever breaking eye contact, dancing wildly to my piss-poor rendition of a song I'd later come to find out had nothing to do with Christmas. Still, I sang for all I was worth, because I knew that if I stopped singing before he wanted me to stop, I would die right here. He danced more frantically, his movements those of a man who never learned of the existence of dancing until a few days ago. He had no rhythm, no beat, and the way he swung the axe with his movements made me fear for my own accidental decapitation. Without breaking stride, I segued from Jingle Bells to Frosty the Snowman, racking my brain for every Christmas song I had to keep this madman dancing. I was a seasonal Scheherazade, and if I had to start making up songs if I couldn't think of any more, I was going to. Looking up at the skating Santa behind this creature was the only thing that kept me going, feeding me more strength, and as I continued, a strange certainty that everything was going to work out. The more I sang, the more I felt confident that we were going to make it out of this. The certainty galvanized when I worked my way through Santa Claus is Coming to Town, putting a little bit extra of the Bruce Springsteen interpretation to it, because that had always been Dad's favorite. I could have sworn that I saw something in the skating Santa's eyes when I made my way to the end of the song, and that was how I knew it was time to stop. The dancing beast before me kept going for about 10 seconds after I finished singing, finishing whatever ritualistic dance he had to perform, before he looked down at me angrily.
"You stopped singing me something of Christmas. I must get another. They can make you sing. Or they can jukebox better. Or you can sing better. Sing better, jukebox better, or hurting them. What's your thought? Naughty or nice, or what was that?"
For the first time I could recall, he stopped muttering. His eyes, then his whole upper body, darted around, searching for some mysterious sound that only he could hear, looking like someone desperately afraid of bees trying to swat one away.
"I know you're there. Come let me see, and we fight like people. I know this. Show me yourself," the man howled, his voice oddly fearful for how horrifying it was.
Soon, though, I thought I could hear the same thing he was. It was a low, quiet voice at first, but one that grew in strength the more it spoke. It was repeating the same few words over and over again, louder and clearer with every repetition. My eyes were still locked onto the eyes of the skating Santa on the mantelpiece, and I could have sworn that they'd begun to glow. The monster lashed out around the room, swinging his axe, smashing pieces of furniture, breaking off chunks of the mantelpiece, even nearly cleaving our Christmas tree in half.
"Where are you?"
the man howled, breathing heavily and looking down at me with his axe in both hands. He stood there, the only sounds in the room his heavy panting and the crackling of the fire. And finally, the voice as clear as day.
"Not my family,"
it yelled, so loud that the man yelped in fear, stumbling toward the mantel. That was when the skating Santa finally pounced, jumping onto the beast's neck. The creature screamed and swung its axe around wildly, but it couldn't hit Santa this way, not as the skating Santa crawled down the beast's chest to its stomach. Gently, the skating Santa pulled open the center of the beast's Santa costume, caressing the bare flesh it exposed. Then, with frightening speed, it plunged its arm into the monster's belly button, a gout of blood spraying as it buried itself to the shoulder inside the now screaming beast. Briefly, the decoration turned its head to me and winked one of its shining eyes in an all too familiar way.
"Don't look, kiddo. You don't want to see this next part," it said, its voice and words unmistakably Dad's.
I asked for this, and I trusted Dad. And so I closed my eyes. I kept them shut through the beast's screaming. I kept them shut through the sounds of tearing and burrowing through flesh. I kept them shut through the muttering pleas for mercy and the great wet sounds of splatter around the room. I even kept them shut at the sounds of emergence, and of fresh new footsteps into the world, footsteps that came at the cost of the beast's screams finally ending. The footsteps approached me, and still I kept my eyes shut. There was a new presence standing beside me, one that was completely new and familiar at the same time. Quietly, it approached and placed a hand on my shoulder. I'd have known that hand anywhere. The touch, the size, the gentle way it squeezed me. If it weren't for the feeling that it was made of plastic, I'd have been convinced that the Dad I knew was standing beside me. Now, kiddo, he said, his other hand slicing through the tape at my wrists and ankles as if it were made of tissue paper.
When I say so, I want you to count to five, and then open your eyes.
Call 911, then go untie the others.
There will be a lot of questions about what happened here tonight, but remember to tell them you didn't see what actually happened.
They will believe you.
When they stop asking questions, remember to have a Merry Christmas, okay?
I sniffled.
Yes, Dad, I will.
Good, he replied. And Jess?
Yeah,
I asked.
Thank you for holding everyone together.
I need you to be strong for me for just a little bit longer, but after that, you don't have to be the strong one anymore.
Not if you don't want to, he said.
I sniffled again.
Thank you.
All right, now remember what I said?
It's time to start counting.
I gulped.
I didn't want him to go.
I didn't care what he was now or what he'd done. I needed Dad here. We all did. It was Christmas, and if I could just hold on to him for a few moments more...
That wasn't how this worked.
Even though I didn't fully know what had happened, I knew that. I wouldn't get the Christmas I wanted. I wouldn't get the happy ending I yearned for. But those of us who were left would get to live and be together. That was something.
One, two, three, four,
five. I opened my eyes. The living room was a horror show of blood, bone, and bits of flesh from what used to be the monster. His axe lay at my feet, mere inches from what I was pretty sure used to be the top of his head. The sight was horrible, almost enough to make me cry out from fear. But when realization pulled over me like a warm blanket, I took a terrible satisfaction in what I saw. I looked back up to the mantle, toward the skating Santa, standing back where it ought to be. Had I not heard what I heard and felt what I felt, it would have been so easy to think this a matter of the imagination for how little had changed with the figure. It no longer had that feeling of warmth, of Dad watching over me, and that truly did sadden me. Its new neighbor, however, didn't sadden me. Standing next to the skating Santa was a crude plastic figure that was undeniably made to represent the beast. It oozed fresh blood, and the look on its ugly face was one of pure fear. Its mouth was caught in a forever scream, and as I looked at it, I could feel its pain and fear. I stood up and walked over toward it, picking it up and turning it over in my hands. Whatever Dad had done to the beast, he had fashioned a singularly unique prison for him. One that he had let me determine the fate of. I knew by looking at it that this was nothing like Skating Santa. This one was stuck as it was, forever screaming, forever in pain. The roaring flames of the fireplace were certainly tempting. But I would leave that temptation for another time. Perhaps another year, or even another decade. With a grim smile that I hoped he could see, I set the beast's figure on the mantle and ran to call for help and free my family.
My new favorite decoration was written by Matt Carter and performed by Fiona J.R. Tichenel. Narration was provided by Matt Carter. This episode was edited by Fiona J.R. Tichenel and Matt Carter. The Shadow Storyteller's theme, written and performed by Dennis Tichenel. The Shadow Storyteller's artwork by Kristen McQuiggan of Drop Dead Designs. Special thanks to Lisa Onzo and Greg Bowles for the use of their guest room in this recording. For more information on the Shadow Storyteller's podcast and our other fiction works, please visit our website at theshadowstorytellers.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe for more information on upcoming episodes. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you again soon.